Hello, my name is Rufus Hound, and welcome to My Teenage Diary, the show where each week we invite fully grown men and women to revisit their teenage past by dusting off their old hormone-fueled, angst-ridden diaries and reading them out in public for the very first time. Will they experience the warm glow of nostalgia or the hot flush of embarrassment? My guest tonight is a stand-up comedian and writer once described as one of the hidden masters of British comedy. That's what he's like now, but we're about to find out what he was like way back then. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Richard Herring! So, Richard, when did you start keeping a diary?
Oh, I think 1976. I had a Disney diary with Mickey Mouse on the front, but basically on that diary, so I would have been embarrassingly old, actually, if it's 1976. I would have been about 8 or 9 years old, and pretty much every entry was just today at school I did maths, English. That's all I wrote, but that was the same every week because there was a timetable, so it was quite a boring
diary. So the upside of that is that you can fill it out in advance save yourself time later on.
But yeah, I sort of started then, and then I did keep it quite regularly, and then it sort of starts getting interesting in about 1980.
Which is where we join your diary.
Which is the diary that I've got here, yeah. And
so we start in 1980. It's the Moscow Olympics, which are being boycotted. John Lennon's just been shot, and fingers around the world are being dislocated thanks to the new Rubik's Cube. Oh. But what is Richard Herring up to?
It's quite interesting, this diary, straight away, because it's got shows I was just as funny then as I am today, basically. Because it says, a diary of Richard Herring. Do not read unless instructed. Then make sure, one, you have a strong drink before you start. But then it genuinely says on the front here, I'm always worried that in 1,000 years' time, this might be discovered and be thought to be a gospel. It then says, I would therefore like to point out that it isn't. So, you know, I had a sense of responsibility with my messianic delusion.
So what does this gospel contain?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting to read the whole thing, because I think as a teenager, you forget. I kind of thought I was quite an innocent, nice, jolly little child. And there's quite a lot of angst, but it's this kind of breathtaking arrogance followed by this self-deprecation and self-pitying. It's just this kind of roller coaster ride. An example of the arrogance is I write in the diary, I'm reading a biography of Gandhi and I'm very impressed by that. And I write in the diary that night, I wish I could have met Gandhi. I think we would have had a lot to share. But then there's also, I mean, this entry, the first entry I'll read, it kind of shows like a mixture of arrogance and self-deprecation all in one. And this fact that I obviously thought that this would be published at some point. It comes out, which is really embarrassing. I don't really bother writing much in this diary still. The sorts of things that would get it published would be going into great details about how I'm losing all my friends. But I'm not very good at that. This is really the main difference between me and, say, Anne Frank. And then I was quite political, which is quite good. There is some moments of politics there, if I can find.
I mean, this is the early 80s, a deeply political time.
It is.
So what does the young Herring saw fit to?
I think the kind of thing, I think this, Rufus, I think you've got to prepare yourself for this, because this is going to turn your cosy middle-class life literally upside down. You won't have thought of the things I thought when I was 14 in December 1982.
Thank God I have this stiff drink to have.
And here it comes. I think the royal family is a waste of time.
Boom!
Yeah, not good like you thought. Bad. Rubbish.
Yeah. Take that, Windsor. Yeah.
Very false, and merely to lull the country into a false sense of security. Don't really know what that means. All the money could help the tramps out on the street. Gandhi couldn't have thought of that, could he? So that is... I was quite obsessed with that idea. I remember when my brother and sister were a bit older than me and they left home. And there were two spare bedrooms in our house. And I kept going on and on to my dad saying, why don't you let homeless people come and live in those spare... My dad was reluctant for some reason to allow drug addicts to come and live in the same house. I don't think there even were any homeless people in Cheddar in Somerset where I grew up. This is another one coming again. I saw you were a bit upset by the last one, so prepare yourself for this. I am anti-war. I think Britain should get rid of all her armies and weapons. It would show the rest of the world we are serious about disarming. We'd do that, wouldn't it? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking we'd get attacked, invaded. Yeah. I've thought of that. I'm not an idiot. No one else would invade us, as other countries would intervene. So for that plan to work, everyone else has to keep their weapons, all the other countries. Yeah. They have to have, if anything, slightly more weapons than they would have had.
Yeah.
Just to make sure, you know, make up for our rash decision to get rid of all of ours. But
and it implies a nation that's curiously pious. We've got rid of all our weapons. But France... Wait, hey, hey, hit him! Hit him!
He's coming for us.
So, having solved the world's problems...
Yeah, well, 1982, 1983 was kind of when the kind of home video... The market exploded, really, and it seems that me and my friend spent a lot of time round at my friend Phil's house watching X Certificate. It was the old days of X Certificate movies on his mum's Betamax video. she made that choice. history has judged Mrs. Fry to be an idiot. But some of the films we did watch, I'm ashamed to say, were pornographic films, which I didn't really approve of because I was a feminist even at 14. But, you know, all my friends were watching them, so I had to watch them all of the way through.
Yeah, of course.
But on New Year's Eve, 1982 to 1983, me and my friends, we celebrated the New Year by watching a double bill of pornographic films. And this is my review of the films. We saw a double bill of very bad porno films, i.e. badly filmed and edited. Good. I was concerned mainly with the production values, and that is that's important. The porno films were getting a bit boring. With any excuse to have sex taken up. now I want them to be realistically plotted, which, if it's realistic to my life, means no one in them having sex for about 6 more years.
So you're almost a bit of a teenage prude. You know, almost any excuse to have sex taken up, because you're watching a porn film. If you want to watch a film that doesn't have that, what you want is a... film. And how sad was it that the top ticket in Cheddar for New Year's Eve was a double bill of porn films?
We were 14. I don't know how we got away with this. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but I've normally found one porn film enough. But going back through your diaries, you said at the beginning you're sort of concerned that you'd always viewed yourself as this sweet-eyed innocent.
Yeah.
But you see there's a darker edge to you. So far, it doesn't really sound like there's anything in these.
Yeah, well, there are some quite strange ones that you come across, and if this was taken out of context, I think you might think I was about to go and shoot everyone at my school. I think it's just... I think you need to know... It's good to have the context. That was mainly quite nice, but you can see I was angry because it sort of starts really big capital letters and then I sort of slightly calm down as it goes down. But it starts off with a word that we can't say... on Radio 4, a very F-off world, it says, and then go on, bugger off. You all hate me, and gradually I'm beginning to hate all you. I don't like any of my so-called friends. My family doesn't understand me. They don't listen to anything I say, and they call me childish, and then they wonder why I get violent. But then, if only they knew the half of it. Then it says, I could have smashed my sister's head in today until she lay dead on the floor. My mum is pathetic. She's so immature. And then I say, the whole fabric of society gets on my nerves.
Wow! Literally.
Just everything.
All of it.
And then my example of this, Rufus, I think shows how privileged my upbringing was. The father and mother love each other and their two kids and give them a good upbringing and all is happy. Yeah. Yeah. All must look good. If anything looks awfully bad, the adults tut quietly to themselves. I hate the fabric of society. Yeah. That is, and all that encompasses.
And it implies a sort of very middle-class sort of child abuse where, you know, oh, if they don't like anything, they tut.
They love me and then they tut. Whose life could be worse than that?
So far we've had you raiding against the world.
Yeah.
We've had you indulging in a double bill of pornography.
Yeah.
But how successful were you with members of the opposite sex?
I mean, really, more than I thought, in a way. But, you know, it's funny, because my dad was my headmaster at school as well, which I thought meant that girls weren't interested in me at all, and I thought it'd kind of... But there are quite a lot of occasions when I'm kind of getting off with girls that I'd almost completely forgotten about, which is sort of strange, because I like to think of myself as this pure... knight who's just loving people from afar. But I just literally, from like June 1982 till the end of this and beyond this diary, well over a year, I was obsessed with Fiona, but she had a boyfriend and I wouldn't ask her out at all. This is one entry where I talk about my love for Fiona, which is, you know, 6 months on, and her boyfriend's called Andy. At dinner, Andy was having his lunch and Fiona walked around the school on her own with me. We talked and agreed jokingly that when she chucked Andy, Fiona would go out with me. We are very friendly nowadays, but I know how much she adores Andy. I pushed two sweet wrappers down Sarah W's cleavage and walked around school holding her hand. Oh, God, Fiona, I want you. I know you... Just no self-awareness. Man.
It is a horrific thing when you're a teenage boy and you do start a relationship with a teenage girl and her dad will sort of look at you glowering and you think, well, I don't know why he has to be like that. I'm quite a nice bloke. And there's always this sense of which he was a young lad once. He knows what's going on in your mind. You're like, what, what? And then you read your diaries and you go, he was bang on. Apparently, Mel Gibson had a special effects team in one of his movies make up heads of teenage boys, which he then had stuck on trophy-like plaques, which he then placed in the lobby of his home. So when his daughter's suitors turned up, took him on dates, he just point at them and then go, have her back by 10. Solid work. So when you read your diaries back, how much of yourself now do you recognise within it?
I think there's definitely differences, you know, and I kind of think what would the 14-year-old me think of what I've become, and, you know, would he be excited that I was a comedian, which is what he would really have wanted to be. You know, we're both obsessed with comedy, we're both obsessed with 18-year-old girls, to be honest.
It's creepy now.
It is creepy. It is almost like with the same person, you know, and I do feel like a kinship with him, and, you know, and I am still a bit of an idiot. But I kind of think, I think ultimately I was just obsessed with comedy, you know, and I wrote lots of comedy, and I think ultimately the younger me would be quite glad that I'd become a comedian.
Have you found this cathartic in any way?
I think it does, you know, it's really interesting to do, and if you didn't keep a diary, it's a shame. I think it's a really interesting thing to be able to look back. If you've got kids, try and encourage them to do it, because I think they will hate it, but then there's a richness there to be able to look back, and, yeah, it does make you feel better about yourself, I think, in a way. And to be able to laugh at yourself, I think, is a great gift. So, yeah, it's worth doing, I think.
Well, you've laughed at yourself, and we've laughed at you.
Thank you.
And with you. We're now going to play out with the track that you believe sums up your teenage years. So what have you chosen?
I have chosen Town Called Malice by The Jam, because I just remember... The Jam were just like that band that really kind of encapsulated that kind of time. But I remember... I didn't even particularly like The Jam at the time. I really like them now. But Emma Pancho used to love them, and we used to spend German lessons going ba 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 at her as a kind of insult. And so I've chosen that because that's where that comes from, A Town Called Malice. That's right.
So as The Jam kicks in, ladies and gentlemen, Richard Herring. That was My Teenage Diary, presented by me, Rufus Hound. The producer was Victoria Payne. It was a Talkback Thames production for Radio 4. Until next time, goodbye.